Hello, and welcome to Lesson 21. This lesson is still part of a few lessons where I'm going to catch up on the questions and potential fuel for discussions that have been hitting my inbox. Please feel free to send any questions or comments to the number specified by Nishma Saini, and I'll be more than happy to address them in the order that they arrive to me. So here's another question. I'm going to try to ask this question using the caller's words. Here are her words. I have a question about my child who has high-functioning ASD. When he gets dysregulated, now let's say there's no school or when there is a lot of environmental stimulation, his behaviors become very out of control and it's very hard to stop it. Like separating and ignoring, it doesn't work for him. Ignoring, then he's not safe. And separating, like we separated him and he just made in his pants. So if you can give me some insight, I would appreciate it. So this is a very common scenario that presents itself amongst this population. Let's remember that children with ASD, no matter what level of functioning they are on, communicate differently than we do. So when I hear a story about a parent who separated a child from a negative behavior and a child made in his pants, I hear a conversation that is going on between a parent and a child. And here's how the conversation goes. The child does something negative, destructive, or unsafe. The parent separates the child from the negative, destructive, or unsafe behavior, hopefully without speaking. The child resists being told what to do or what not to do. All children do that. Yet, as you've heard me say time and time again, the parent must be the one transmitting the messages of appropriate behavior to the child. Most children tantrum when this happens, using their words, their vocal cords, or their actions. They cry, scream, yell, hit, or kick. The reason they do this is because they know that their parents won't be able to tolerate these tantrum reactions, and therefore hitting, kicking, yelling, and screaming is the best way to paralyze the parent. Smart kids. This child, for some reason, knew that one of the best ways to resist a behavior is to do something over the top. He probably knows by now that yelling and screaming and hitting and kicking won't work because these behaviors had been ignored in the past. So he came up with a way to truly paralyze his mother. He made in his pants. Smart kid. He somehow knew from his background and history that a toileting accident is going to upset his mother. Like I said, smart kid. So what do? Are you going to get intimidated by a toileting accident? I wouldn't. No one dies from a toileting accident. No one is unsafe here. All you need to do is clean him up, change him, and move on. Continue to separate him from this particular behavior for as many times as it takes until he gets the message. The fact that he had a toileting accident tells me two things. One, he got the message that someone out there wanted something different than what he wanted. Excellent. And two, he knows how to paralyze his parent. Even better. So you said that separating didn't work for him? I'm not so convinced. What is the definition of the word worked anyway? I know you were hoping that you could successfully get him to stop whatever damaging or negative behavior he was doing. I know that's how most people define the word worked. People need to see immediate or almost immediate results, and based on the results they see or don't see, they decide if a strategy does or doesn't work. And that's how parents get so quickly intimidated and derailed and back off on a strategy before they really know if something worked or not. Children with ASD take a long time and many, many repetitions before we see that the lesson is being learned. One needs to have loads and loads of patience and be willing to repeat the same strategy over and over again. Otherwise, you might cut yourself short and miss out on a wonderful opportunity of a strategy actually shaping a child's behavior. As Rav Preda is famous for, being willing to sit and teach a weak student a Mishnah 400 times until he got it. From there comes our famous Zug, that you're not a Rebbe unless you're willing to teach somebody something 400 times. Have you tried to SWC from a negative behavior 400 times? And if he makes in his pants one time or even a few times along the way, so change him. But don't let that intimidate you. You're bigger than that, no? Funny how your question about him wetting his pants reminds me about when and how I toilet trained my daughter. A lot of you have probably heard or read about the way I toilet trained my daughter. She was totally deaf, born legally blind, and diagnosed with autism. But in case you have not, it's kedai to repeat the story at this time. My daughter was 4 years old, and after great effort, a myriad of applications and interviews, she got accepted into BYA in Flatbush, a mainstream school. As I previously mentioned, there were no other school options for her, so it was a huge simcha that they were willing to take her with a shadow that I sent in and that I paid for, full time, with no money. I have no idea how that got paid for, but when I look back, I see that the Ribbono Shel Olam had a huge budget for Rachi Yaroslavitz Globman that had absolutely nothing in the world to do with me. At any rate, the one condition that the school made in order to accept her, and this was after 4 years of heavy, heavy, heavy therapy and pushing forward to do the best we could for her, the one condition they made is that she would have to be toilet trained first. She wasn't toilet trained yet. I had no idea how this could possibly work, but since this discussion happened 10 months before she would actually be going to school, I figured that somehow, some way, we would train her. So I tried the conventional methods. No go. I explored every method I could get my hands on. No go. Let me remind you that she was totally deaf at that time and was in the midst of a 3-surgery process to improve her eyes. No amount of explaining got me anywhere. Nothing doing. Anyway, one day, as I was thinking about what I could do to get the message across to her, it hit me that the only message that could probably work would be the actual toileting accidents. And as long as she was wearing Pampers, pull-ups weren't around in those days, and she wasn't feeling the wetness, and she probably wasn't feeling when she passed urine and moved her bowels, that without this feeling, nothing could help. So I made a decision. No more Pampers. I decided, I don't care how long this takes. Weeks, months, even years. There is no point in keeping the Pampers on. Yes, it will smell. Yes, it won't be pleasant. But not having a school for her is even worse. After all, I reasoned, people train their dogs. So if people train their dogs, she has at least as much intelligence as a dog. I am going to train her. So that was it. The decision was made. I started on Isru Chag Sukkos. Let me tell you, my friends, it was not easy. I packed up a diaper bag with wipes and multiple changes of clothing, and wherever we went like that. I put pads out on the car seats and took them along wherever we went. Doctor's appointments, therapy sessions, the library, stores. We went everywhere. And she had accidents everywhere. But I kept my mindset in place. It's okay, I told myself. Just clean it up. Sometimes when I had extra time and it wasn't in public, we would HOH, hand over hand, the cleanup together, and I would take her to the toilet and point. Here, I used to say, we make here. Sometimes when that wasn't practical, I just changed her, myself, without involving her. But either way, every time she urinated or moved her bowels, we changed clothing. This happened about 7-ish or 8 times a day. And I showered 2 or 3 times a day. I felt like I was living in a barn. Shabbos was the hardest, but we kept going. I kept telling myself, what's the point of turning back? What will that help? I'd rather keep doing this than have a child who couldn't pass the toilet training stage. Anyway, the weeks passed. There were times I thought I would seriously lose my mind. And don't forget, there was no support, no one to talk to. Sometimes I think that was a chesed, because if I would have had someone to talk to, they would have told me I was crazy and probably weakened my resolve. But anyway, finally, Hanukkah came. And it was Shabbos Hanukkah, and we went to my parents for Shabbos. At that time, she wasn't walking independently yet, but she was cruising around rooms holding on. She used to stand holding on and shake back and forth with her head. That's a stim behavior. And laugh at nothing in particular, another stim behavior. My next story after this one is going to be about those behaviors in just a moment. So anyway, she was cruising down the hallway off the kitchen in my parents' house, and we were all schmoozing around the Friday night suda, and all of a sudden, I heard a loud crash of a toilet seat being put down. I jumped up, ran down the hall, and there she was, trying to climb onto the toilet. I fast pulled down her tights and underwear and dumped her on the toilet. And guess what, my friends? She made. And I just stood there and sobbed my eyes out. I promise you, I should have said Shechianu right there, but I was in the bathroom. And here is the kicker. She never had another accident after that. That part, I admit, was very strange. Once the lesson got through, it was there for life. There, it was over. And life moved on. This story happened in fall of 1987. Fast forward to the year 2014, some 27 years later. I was writing my books, my hands full books, all about parenting, behavior management, and consistency, about INB, SWC, missions, and all of that. And I got to the point where I quoted about Rav Preda, who patiently sat and repeated Mishnas with weak students over and over and over again, 400 times. And even another story where one time when a student became anxious because they were calling Rav Preda to a meeting and the student became frightened that his Rebbe would leave him, Rav Preda stayed and learned the Mishnah with him another 400 times. And the reward he got was that he and the entire generation got Olam Haba and he lived to be 400 years old. As I was thinking about all of this, I wondered about the multitude of things that I taught Rachi through serious repetition, over and over and over again, without looking to the right or to the left, without deciding whether or not the strategy was working or not. Because I used to tell myself, if I stop today after 347 times, hey, who knows? Maybe the lesson would have gotten learned on the 348th time. So I was always afraid to stop, because maybe, just maybe, I was one repetition away from the lesson being learned. So as I was thinking about the toilet training, I began to wonder. One minute, I thought, I wonder how many accidents Rachi had until the lesson was taught. So I did a little math. Approximately 7 accidents a day times 7 days a week, about 50 accidents a week. How many weeks between Sukkot and Hanukkah? 8. So what's 8 times 50? Whoa, there's 400. The magic number, there it is. So in my desperation to get Rachi into BYA, into this school, I hit the magic number. Now, most of the time you won't have to schwitz it out until 400. You'll hit 50, you'll hit 100, maybe a bit more. But if you are in for the long haul of 400, and you don't tell anyone else what you're doing because they're going to weaken your resolve, you just might be pleasantly surprised. Here's another story that I promised about the shaking back and forth and laughing at nothing in particular. A real self-stim autistic behavior. So this behavior was extremely strong, starting from approximately the age of 2. First it was while lying on her back, then in sitting, and eventually in standing, holding on, cruising, walking. In the earlier years, I was so busy with so many other aspects of her development that I didn't take on the behavior. But as school approached and she grew older and taller, the behaviors became less tolerable and more and more and more inappropriate. So we started a basic SWC method, separate without comment. In those days, it wasn't called SWC. It wasn't called anything. The hands full program had not yet been born. It simply was an exercise in desperation. Every time I saw the behavior, I stopped it. With my hand on her shoulder, holding her still for a minute, separating her and redirecting her possibly to another activity. It was hard, but I stuck with it. There were those along the way who told me that maybe she needs the movement, but I had no proof of that and had no other choice than to make her appropriate in school. So we just stopped the behavior every time we saw it. And finally, it stopped. One day, I remember, it hit me. 1 minute. I haven't seen her shake in a few days. No laughing either. Wow, great. I was very excited. She must have been about 8 at the time. Then, a few weeks later, I woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and I saw a shadow moving in the hallway. As I approached, my heart fell. There she was, standing in the corner and shaking her head. Whoa, 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 this was a huge blow. And of course, all the voices of doubt crept in to haunt me. You see, they said, you see what happens when you squash her into a mold? You see what happens when you don't let her be? It's going to ooze and leak out somewhere else. How do you know she doesn't need this movement? How do you know she doesn't need this laughing? Truth was, I didn't know at all if she needed this behavior or not. But I did know one thing, that without this behavior, many doors could possibly open to her. And with this behavior, many doors would be slammed shut. How could I sacrifice a possibility of a normal education and eventually a normal existence for the need to shake one's head? Isn't the need to have a normal life also a need? Isn't a need to move ahead and grow and develop also a normal need? I simply did not know what to do. And once again, I'm going to remind you that other than the one or two therapists who were seeing her at that time for speech and language, there was no one to ask. And probably Nachamazel, because in the seichel that the Ribbono Shel Olam gave me, we chose to move onwards. So we set our alarm clocks for every half hour and took turns checking the hallway. I would wake up and check, and a half hour later, my husband would wake up and check. And eventually, after another week or two, there were no more middle of the night shaking episodes. The lesson had been learned, and since then, I never, and she's 40 years old now, saw this shaking head behavior again. So you might argue with me, and you'd be right. How are we to know what's right? Bottom line is nobody knows. Not you, not your clinicians, not me, not anyone. That's why it's so important for parents to follow what their kishkas tell them and do whatever they feel they can do. The only reason I'm telling these stories is simply to share the idea that yes, some behaviors can be eradicated by repeated separate without comment, SWC. So back to our caller. You asked for some insight about how INB and SWC can help out in the case of a child with high-functioning ASD. To review, true, you may not be able to INB lots of behaviors because you have to keep your child safe and your child may need loads of repeated feedback, which INB does not provide. But repeated SWC will go a long, long way in providing the conditioning needed to remove an unwanted behavior, distracting a child from what they are doing and giving them functional activities during a time when they are dysregulated will go a long, long way if it's done repeatedly and consistently. And don't forget about Rav Preda, the role model of special education and the one who introduced us to the power of repetition. Remember, you might be just one repetition away from the lesson being learned. Hatzlacha Rabbah.